know you're broken hearted, cause the peace you're hoping for is off the scenes apart.
Welcome to We Love the Weather podcast from AlumniBoard.com. This is your host, Robert Rosenthal. Since it's the end of the year, I thought that the best way to wrap everything up was to do a year in the review pod, and to do a year in the review, the year in review, and we're going to do that tonight with, I like saying this, with the two senior writers from IlliniBoard.com on the basketball side, Tyler, and on the football side, Craig. And I thought we'd start with a little history of how we started doing this and why they started writing for the site. So, Craig, we'll start with you. So you and I meet, I believe, in 2013 was the first time. At the Gately practice, is that right? In Chicago, the spring practice held at Gately Stadium?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
Yes. You came up, introduced yourself, and we stood around and talked football and this and that. And then at the same practice in 14, no, we saw each other at Rantoul, right?
Yep.
Yeah, we saw each other correct. At Rantoul. And then the same practice at 14, we started talking about you writing for the site. And then that fall is when you started doing Craig as the Scout, right?
That is correct. Yep.
That's right. And then that fall, you came with me to the bowl game, a bowl game which you scouted, where the offensive coordinator in that bowl game is the guy who was just hired tonight as the offensive coordinator at Illinois. How is about that for everything tying together?
Circle of life here real quick.
That's right. Okay. So, and then Tyler, you and I have known each other for years on Illini Board, and the first time you started writing was also 2014?
Yes. We were just talking about that before. I was rifling through my phone frantically, and I remembered this because I was on a camping trip in Holland, Michigan. And got the out-of-the-blue text asking if I would consider writing for the site, and I was like, immediately, yep, sign me up. And so that was, again, October of 2014.
Yes.
And I think I my first contribution was the basketball preview for that 14-15 season, which I think is the next to the last season for John Gross, if memory serves me correctly.
So this is the seventh year both of you have done this.
Crazy.
Yeah.
That is nuts. So you've done Craig as a Scout for seven full seasons?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got and I have all the archives of all of the things I've written, and boy.
Do you want to know how many football games we've won in those 7 years, Craig?
No, I don't.
We could do it off the top of our heads. We can do it right here.
We won six and 14.
Yes. So we won six, then we won five. So we were 11. Then we won
two.
Three.
Oh, three. It was three, a three and two. 16.
So we're 14. Then we won two. 16. Then we won four. We're at 20 wins. Then we won six. We're at 26. And then we won two. 28 football wins in seven
seasons.
Yeah. And I've written that many scouts about that many teams.
Yeah.
A bunch of life choices at this moment.
Not great. Now that you bring it up, 3,000 to 4,000 words at a crack.
This is going to be great. You're both going to quit by the time we get done with this.
Yeah.
How useless this is.
You know, the funny part is, and you and I talked about this at Gately, though, right? Like, a lot of the stuff that I'm writing, it takes me a lot longer than what I'd do it before, but it's just stuff I'm looking at. I'm doing it anyway, right? And right. I think that's kind of the thing. Like, I'm a scheme nerd, which makes it a lot differently. I'm not into the recruiting, and so I think that kind of ties in with what the site does quite well. But you know, there a couple years ago, the Cubit year, I was kind of done. I mean, I was like, all right, I don't know, this is just isn't worth doing it anymore, because they don't care. You know, the dagger in the heart really was for me a dagger in the heart comment. And then, you know, hey, we hired Lovey, and like, well, maybe. And then 63-0. I got lucky because I had a family event going on that day, because it was right before Thanksgiving, or right after, or the weekend before Thanksgiving. So I had a family event going on, so I didn't watch any of that game. And so it's like, okay, I didn't have to experience that super negativity. And as we've talked about before, I didn't actually get to watch the Wisconsin game live this year. Mm-hmm. So there's like four games that I have missed in that 7 year span where I haven't watched them live. And I believe they are the four worst losses Illinois has put on the board during that time. So it helps a little bit.
Yes.
The season tickets and going to all those games and just, you know, I mean, nothing's as heartbreaking as Fresno State 2009, but yeah, it's hard to sometimes keep it going that way.
Yep. But someday, as we hope, as we maintain hope someday. And while Tyler is over here, he gets right about the top 15 in Illinois basketball this year. So,
well, yeah, you say that, but I mean,
well, it's a good point.
Our journey, and I was a year off. Actually, that was John Gross's third season at Illinois. So actually that first year he was, we were, I think they won 19 games, NIT. That's the game where we, I think, went into the Big Ten tournament in Chicago and got destroyed by Michigan. And that kind of sealed the fate for the NIT bid.
That was year two. Okay. So wait, I want to go through this now since we just went through the football wins. So 12-13, he takes over. He gets Brandon, DJ, Tyler, Griffey. He beats Indiana. He gets a 7 seed. He's the hero. That fall of 14, he lands Laurent Black. He lands Quentin Snyder. He's going to get Cliff Alexander. Life is going to be great. And then all that falls apart. And that – when was that? Was that fall? No, you're right. You're right. I'm off by a year. So, yeah, so 14, spring of 14, Abrams missed the shot in the Big Ten tournament, right?
No. 14, it was Big Ten tournament in Chicago, get drilled by Michigan, go to the NIT, get drilled by Alabama.
I thought that was 15. Spring of 13 is when they went to the tournament.
Right. This is great. Right. This is great audio. Yeah. People can look this stuff up, and we're trying to get it from our brains.
Yeah.
When did Abrams miss the floater? Spring of 14 or spring of 15? I'm thinking of the game where, like, we were still like 7-11 in the Big Ten, but
yeah,
that was
spring of 14, and I did not come on until fall of 14. So yes.
Okay.
But the point I was going to make is the blog's been around since 2012, right? Is that correct?
So well, I mean, the Illini board combination happened in early 2013. So there was Illini.com for 4 years, and then that happened. So August of 13 is when we did the first launch.
Right.
And then that next year, we added both of you as writers.
So, but still, you talked about the years of ineptitude in football as far as wins, but basketball was after a promising start. I came on with, and considering my history, is Illinois basketball similar to yours? I mean, we were never bad, but right. You know, the six years now going on seven that I've written for the blog, we've gone NIT. Oh God,
we've never been to the tournament.
Exactly. NIT, 15 wins, NIT, coach fired, then the two back-to-back worst seasons in Illinois history. Finally, a good basketball team after covering the same nonsense for as long as we did, and finally, of course, everything gets wiped away because, as we like to say, it's so Illinois.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's just launch into it then, because this is a year in review, and COVID is going to play a huge role, and we don't need to sit here and rehash for people how much we suck. Okay. So I'll try to paint the picture. So we're going January 1 last year. So. Beginning of January last year, we felt okay about football. Craig and I had just gone to the Red Box Bowl. Craig and I spent that night. What was it? Was it the 30th or the 30th? No, it was the 30th.
30th. Yep.
Yes, we went to some bar in South San Francisco. I fell asleep at the table. Because I was exhausted. And you, me, Martin, and Carmen sat there and solved the Illinois football issues. And we had lost the Reno Bowl, but we still felt okay. We'd finally made a bowl. We're there. So I'm going to paint the picture here first. So there, that's where football is. Basketball, we were feeling really, really bad. We had lost Miami, Michigan. Who were the three M's we lost?
Missouri. Come on. You just kind of block that from your mind. It doesn't even register with you.
Yes. So we lose the three M games.
Actually, four if you count Michigan State, which was the next M when we got throttled at East Lansing.
That was like the 3rd of January or something like that.
Exactly.
Or, and we January destroyed 2nd. By 20 plus.
Yeah.
So, and at that point, we were like out of the tournament and like, how can this be? And this was supposed to be the year it all turns around. So we begin the year there, right? Like we until Io's shot drops against Wisconsin or maybe the Purdue win, but until
I think the Purdue win was the first real, I mean, obviously the win by 40 against a Purdue team that ended up not being that great, but it's literally their worst offensive performance in like school history. And you started to think maybe some of this defensive stuff is starting to take hold. And so that ended up being the kickstart for what ended up being what 7 games in a row before.
So, Yes. So as we go through, so let's just start with January. Okay about football, but we're really not like there's this, did these three games mean something? And I'm out there waving my arms and screaming and saying, look at the injuries. These last three games meant nothing. You know, we didn't have all these players, but in football, there was this kind of growing doubt, especially as recruiting started slow. There was this heavy growing doubt of, did 2019, was it the start of something or was it an aberration? So let's at least go back there, Craig. Where were you, let's say like mid-January last year after the bowl game loss? We're learning about a few transfers in February and this and that. Where did you honestly think the football program was at that time of year?
Cautiously optimistic. I think I wrote after the bowl game, you know, Bo Baldwin, who was the OC at Cal at the time, said the one thing about the Illinois defense is that it's not very schematically complex. Mm-hmm. They rely on forcing turnovers and they're all about being disciplined and doing that. And I was a little concerned about the fact that we basically graduated our entire defensive line. And then Martin, you and I, were debating, and Carmen and Martin, Carmen and I were on one side and you and Martin were on the other with regards to who, whether or not Illinois had a middle linebacker to make this scheme go. And if they, and you guys were both saying that Jake Hansen moving there was going to make it work. Mm-hmm. And I was concerned that moving him out of will linebacker took away our top turnover guy. Mm-hmm. And that made us more, I'm trying to think of the word to look for, but I was hoping it was going to work, but I was cautiously optimistic. How's that? If Hansen moving to the middle meant that we lost that outside presence and we couldn't replicate that, and with a new D line, I was thinking we might be in trouble. And so that's where I was. It's, you know, the transfer portal. And I'm going to go down in your podcast right now as a Beckman apologist, but I'm going to just take the beating right now and call it out ahead of time. But Beckman came in and did all the JUCO recruiting and everything. And then we all looked at it and said, this is not sustainable. You don't get enough people in here year after year. And then Lovey started doing it because we started seeing a talent bump up. And now all of a sudden we're saying, oh, well, you know, we're just going to live off the transfers. And that was probably the, whenever that became the go-to for the Illinois football team, that was where I really started to say that things weren't happening, because Beckman had a very bad hit rate with JUCOs, but he did pull in some really good ones with Ward and Geronimo Allison and a few others. Yeah. You're taking the guys who obviously didn't make it at other programs. It's going to be a real hit and miss type of a scenario. Talent levels up, but fewer years of those guys, that's not the way to build a program sustainably. So you're hoping that 2020 is a really good year, cautiously optimistic, so that you can then go and really get the prep recruiting going again for 2021.
Yep.
You know, I'm gonna jump in as a basketball guy here, but hearing you mention that quote from the Cal coach, the parallel between that quote And the quote from Archie Miller in Underwood's second year, when after they had run us off the floor in the assembly, in our assembly hall, State Farm Center, and he said, "All the Illinois defense is very unique. All they do is make you shoot threes and layups." And you're like, "Well, wait a minute, that's not really a good thing." So I guess the contrast is though is that Brad Underwood took that to heart, not that quote, of course, but he realized that there was something fundamentally that needed change, and he did it. And that, you know, that was kind of the story of the success of last year. Whereas Lovey obviously is never going to give up on his defense, never did.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, yep. Yeah, that's funny. That's a good comparison of, like, I mean, you're right. Like, Gentry came, changed the things. They had the analytics kid from K-State or whatever did a report for them, and they looked at it and said, "We need some new stuff," and they didn't. And on the flip side, Lovey said, "This is what we do, and we run these four plays, and we run them to perfection." And
I'll even hire my son to help me.
Yep. And here we are.
Lovey made a defensive change when they got rid of Hardy and they took out the nickel back. And Lovey said, "You know, we don't need more athleticism on the field, but we need another linebacker."
Yep.
That's going to slow down the passing games of opposing teams. And here we are. He doubled down on it. Yep.
You're right. One coach changed, the other doubled down. I think we're done with the podcast pretty much here. We just recapped all of 2020. Let's move on. Let's go back. Let's go to basketball here. Okay, so it turns at Purdue, Wisconsin. Let's go right through that whole run all the way up to maybe the shot at Michigan. Was that the seventh win in a row or whatever? You know, like,
seventh win was actually a rather anticlimactic win. The DMW block against Minnesota.
Oh, the Minnesota letdown game. But suddenly, the University of Illinois is ranked in basketball again. Right. And you know, for the first time since, what, 14 or whatever it was. And here we are. So there's this really quick turnaround to a season that looked dead after what, January? When was that Michigan State game, did you say?
January 2.
January 2nd. So 2 days into the new year.
3 days later was the Purdue game, which was the blowout. But then over the next six games, that's when really not only did the season turn around, but that's when the kind of this legend of Io kind of grew, where he just established himself as like the predominant assassin closer in all of college basketball. Because you had the Wisconsin game and that huge shot. Then he closed out the game at Rutgers with a couple, you know, it was mainly free throws down the stretch, but he made every single one. And when you had to, we were in the 1-1 and he, you know, every single time he stepped to the line. Then you had Northwestern where he put that game away with a couple of late mid-range jump shots. Then Purdue, which was more of just a overall just blowout. We, you know, obviously we had Purdue's number last year. Then the Michigan shot, which was like the chef's kiss moment of Io's ascendance to that level.
Yep. Called game.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. So let's go ahead and roll into February. So that we win these seven in a row. We got ranked after the Rutgers win, I think. And then we climb all the way, you know, we're in the teens, I believe. And then the four losses in a row. So we had talked, like, I wrote a post before that. So we had to play. Let me look at the schedule here.
It's Iowa, Maryland, Rutgers,
Michigan State, Rutgers, Penn State. And so I think I even did a poll of, like, you know, if we can go 2-3, it's a miracle through this stretch. You know, like 2-3, we could probably still be alive to win the Big Ten. 1-4 is probably acceptable. You know, we're playing, you know, four or five consecutive ranked teams. They were all, I think, top 17 in KenPom or whatever it was at the time. But we lose four in a row. Iowa, you know, the real big letdown at Maryland. The Michigan State game where Iowa's going to hit yet another big shot and turns his knee, and we think he's done for the year. Then we go to Rutgers and get beat pretty soundly without Io. So there was this dip that maybe we don't talk about as much of, you know, now Iowa came back and we won at Penn State, but let's talk about that depth a little bit.
Top 10 Penn State.
Yes, you're right.
Right.
You're right.
It's fun. Yeah, so, you know.
Go ahead.
So you can't help. We just spent the first part of the cast talking about the downturn or the low points of this football and basketball programs over the several years leading up to it. So you can't remove that deep seated angst from Illinois fans. You just feel like, you know, the other shoe is going to drop, something around the corner is just going to happen. And so, you know, you win seven in a row and you think you're in a really good place, but fans are always waiting for, okay, what next? When's this going to turn around? Because it's Illinois, so it's always going to happen. And I remember I covered that Maryland game, and even after that was after the Iowa loss, because that was still a really good, solid performance. You went on the road, and that game was down to the wire, and it was, so you're still thinking you're going to come back and have these two back-to-back home games with Maryland and Michigan State, and you're going to get right back going. Campus was just alive that Friday. It was a Friday night. It was a weird Friday night game for a Big Ten game. You know, the entire basketball, college basketball world is kind of focused on Champaign because it's the only game on the schedule that night. Campus was just on fire. I drove through down Green Street. There's kids everywhere. You know, and there's a line outside the assembly hall. The TV trucks are there filming the crush going in. We're wearing those white script throwbacks, Scott Van Pelt's in the building, and we kind of lay a big egg. And you're like, now here it comes. And then, of course, you mentioned, then there's Michigan State and Iowa, and you know, this, knees just don't bend that way. And you're thinking, it's over. And then you mentioned Rutgers, and Iowa doesn't play, and you still think, well, you know, how can we possibly salvage this? Because there's no way
Iowa's going to come back. The tournament?
Yeah. Right.
Are we going to get this close and not even get there? Yeah, and that Maryland game wasn't – that's when I was in Puerto Rico, and I'm trying to get a signal, and I can't. But I can get the score. I can't get a stream working. And didn't we – weren't we up like 15?
Yeah, up 14 in the first half, just went off to, controlling the game. And it was kind of like the Rutgers game the other night. Dominant start, and you're up 14. Mm-hmm. With maybe 10 left in the first half, and Maryland chips away here, chips away there, and all of a sudden this 14-point lead is like 4-5 at halftime, and then it's just the momentum shifts, and now all of a sudden you went from up 14, now you're down 7 with 4 to play, and then you're kind of like just scrambling, and then weren't able to get all the way back. And then again, the Michigan State game was such a heartbreak and such a shocking, because your lasting memory is watching Iowa, you know, writhing on the floor, and you think that's it, season's over. But
and thinking back to like that, like if you think about the Illinois fan moment of, you know, we've been waiting for so long. I think, you know, Craig, you'll appreciate this. Like, I think in terms of the Sam Ellinger Texas moment where they win that bowl game and he gets on the mic and says, "We're back," you know, and the Texas fans go crazy. And since that moment, they just still can't put it together, and they're still not back. And, you know, Illinois basketball fans have been waiting for this, like, it's happening! You know, it's been more than a decade. And so for that Maryland game to start like that, it was just so cruel to be like, yes, it's happening. Yes, it's happening on national television. Come visit us, world. And then... Just the slow death and the crash, and then Iowa's injury and 4 losses in a row. And you're right. Like, we are so stuck on the other shoe is dropping. We can feel it dropping. We might not even make the tournament. We won 7 in a row, finally got ranked in the teams. We're talking about a 3 seed, and now it's over.
Because no one thought Iowa was going to come back. I mean, everyone saw that injury and thought, oh my gosh, like I said earlier, knees just don't bend that way. And so you're thinking that, you know, didn't play for Rutgers, but then you start to hear the little rumblings that, oh, Iowa practiced a little bit. Oh, Iowa's warming up. Oh, Iowa's in the starting lineup at Penn State.
Yes.
And then
Iowa's hitting the winning shot, hitting a runner down the lane. To beat number 9 and put us back on track. And then, you know, it rolls from there, because then we knew the back end of the schedule, you know, you go Nebraska and Northwestern and, you know, Indiana and all this stuff and everything else. And so then, so now we're early March. I went to the Ohio State game because after that Indiana win at the beginning of March, we had, you know, for the first time since 06, we controlled our own destiny in the Big Ten of winning a title with two games left. Yeah, have to be the first time since, maybe not even 06 did we control our destiny. Had to be 05 maybe. But yeah, we like Carmen and I went to that game at Ohio State, sat in the stands. I didn't cover it as a media. I wanted to sit there with an orange shirt on and go crazy because
you wanted to Michigan State it. You wanted to Michigan State football it, didn't you?
Exactly what we wanted to do. And that didn't happen.
Yeah, so funny story about that game. So I'm actually in, this is the week before COVID, and I'm actually in the Cayman Islands that week. And I see the games on ESPN2. Now, our hotel room doesn't have this, but I'm thinking, you know what? Somewhere on this island has to get ESPN2. So I go tromping down the street looking for a quote-unquote sports bar. And this place says sports bar. So I walk in, and they have, like, Jeopardy on TV. It's said, so I go up to the bar, and it's me, you know, and it's a fabulous setting. The beach is right there. But it's me and a bunch of old people drinking Mai Tais, watching Jeopardy. I'm like, can you put can you find ESPN2? And the lady looks at me like, what? I'm like, just give me the remote. And so I'm literally at this bar with the remote, flipping channels, and all of a sudden there it is. And so I got the Elmo again. I'm the only person that at the bar went, because I think people are getting my vibe, because I'm a little intense when I'm watching these games as a fan. And so all of a sudden I start out and all these people are around me, and I look around by like middle of second half, I'm like the only person, everyone's moved like three seats away from me. Yeah. So I'm feeling what you're feeling. But yeah, that was that was a disappointment. At that point you still had the hope of a Big Ten championship, you know, at that point.
Hang your banner, man. Yeah. Yep. And what we've learned here is I go to Puerto Rico and we lose, you go to Cayman Islands and we lose.
Yep.
We find a way to win either one of those games, we do have a Big Ten championship banner hanging. So you and I are never going anywhere in the Caribbean ever again.
Correct. But yeah, I came home on Saturday though, after that, and showed up in Champaign on Sunday for the Iowa game, which was probably the highlight of the season, at least from, you know, big picture standpoint. That was just, you know, considering the journey of the really slow start, then the big high at the 7-game losing streak, and then the low where we had the 4 games and Iowa gets hurt, and then you back up with a, you know, 4 out of 5 stretch, and then you have that fantastic atmosphere, and this time you deliver that win, and you're rolling into the tournament on a high, and you're going to be your top 4 seed, you get the double bye in the Big Ten tournament, and then something else happened.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, to think about that Ohio State trip, you know, Carmen and I went to Ohio State on, what was that, like March 5th or something, 6th, something like that. Like, we, you know, it was midweek, March 5th. And like, we're driving, we're in a crowd, we're staying in a hotel. Like, even then, we had no inkling. Like, I mean, maybe there were some people that were starting to get like, hey, this is getting really serious and this and that. But at least for Carmen and I on that trip, there was no sense of any. I even think at the Iowa game, like with the fans in the stands, there wasn't even this hesitation of like, hey, something might be coming.
Well, I think it was, and I was, you know, I mentioned the Cayman Islands trip, and it was weird there because cruise ships, it's a big cruise ship area, and the cruise ships there were, they didn't let them in. And so you got to say, hey, this may be something serious because on this major cruise ship hub, and they're not letting these people off the boats. But you still, you just can't possibly wrap your mind around the idea of shutting everything down, because that just doesn't happen. And you think the NCAA is not going to cancel a tournament. They make $1 billion off this thing. And so, after the Iowa game, that's March 8th. 4 days later, everything shuts down. But I drove home from the Iowa game. It wasn't even a thought in my mind, right, that there was a possibility that they were going to shut everything down and not have a tournament.
I mean,
but then 4 days later,
on March 11th, I drove to somewhere in Southern Illinois to do a cable access show with a guy named Bruce Dickey, who does this cable access show in, I believe it's in Flora, Illinois. Goes out to like a local cable. We preview the Big Ten tournament. He knew I was covering it. So this is like Wednesday. Like the tournament starts that night. We went through a bracket. We went through how far can Illinois go. Like this is
you're texting me. I remember you were texting me that I should go, right? I'm like, of course you should go.
Yes.
Because why would I think otherwise?
This is 7 hours before they canceled that or before, you know, before Rudy the NBA player, who was the NBA Rudy player?
Gobert.
Yes. Before he's touching microphones and claiming he's sick, and then he really is sick, and the whole world falls apart. And I'm planning to go to the Big Ten tournament the next day, and we're planning to launch the subscriptions on the site on Monday and everything else. So, Craig, I'll go to you this time. So, what's your COVID story? Because I know Tyler's and I know my own, but like, what's your hey, everything's fine with sports to wait, are we even going to play a single college game, football or basketball, in this entire calendar year? Like, where were you there?
So, unfortunately for me, I had a death in the family, so I had a funeral to go to.
Oh my gosh.
So my aunt passed away, let's say March 10th. And so I'm like, okay.
The world is falling apart while your family is trying to gather to grieve.
And I come from a very large family, and it's like, we're going to have this very large gathering. And it was March 10th, and like, well, you know, there's this thing going on, whatever. But like, okay. So I drive home, you know, get in the car for many hours. And while I was going home, decided to drive because I'm like, I'm not sure flying, what's going on, whatever, just in case. Yeah. So I drove it. And when I show up, or as I'm driving up and I'm getting close to home and, you know, showing up, the Ivy League, I think that night canceled their tournament, or they got rid of all the spectators and then they canceled it later, however that all went down. I was like, oh, it's the Ivy League. You know, of course they're going to be the first ones to go do that. But then as I'm driving, I'm hearing like, well, the Big Ten might be canceling their basketball tournament as well. And then like this Pac-12 is doing it. I'm like, this might be really serious. So then, you know, go all the way up through like the Big Ten, like they have the people on the, I was talking to my sister at her place, and you know, the Michigan's out on the floor, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, they pulled all the players off the floor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man, this is not good. And then I'm driving back home from the funeral, and I got a call from my boss at work, and he's like, hey, by the way, I know you weren't in the office. You missed a couple of days at the end of the week last week. You can't go into the office on Monday. So I hope you took everything home you needed. I was like, what? So they sent out a note to the office on like Friday, like, take everything home you're going to need. You might be home for a little bit. And I'm like, well, when will I be able to go back in? He's like, maybe May. And I was like, oh, this is real. So then it's like, oh man, this is not good. So it was supposed to be like, and this is when sports started to kind of hit me. Cause it's like, well, we'll go back after Memorial Day. I was like, then the office is like, well, no, it's going to be the 4th of July. And they did that like beginning of May, then mid June. It's like, just kidding. It's going to be Labor Day. And then I'm like, well, if it's Labor Day, now I'm starting to walk back into, you know, the football season and stuff. And like, oh, this, you know, that you should be opening up camps and stuff in August. This might not happen.
Yeah.
That was kind of my, like,
when moment. Was the next time you were physically in your, or did they at least let you go get your stuff?
I was allowed to go back in through a whole weird process, like mid May.
Wow.
And I could be in there for an hour.
You're on the clock.
Yeah,
you really were. Yeah, you know, you badge in and like you badge out, and the guy was like, "You were in there for 55 minutes. What were you doing?" It's like picking up all the stuff I needed. I mean, like for us, it was like all your files, everything. If you needed it, you needed to take it home. So it was quite different. So
that's crazy.
That week was so surreal. I mean, that going back to that week in March when everything kind of shut down, because all these conference tournaments had started, and you know, the people forget. I mean, I even forgot that the Big Ten tournament actually played their Wednesday games, their two Wednesday games, and then all these teams
played on Thursday for one half.
Yeah, and then pulled up
a half of a game.
Yes.
Yeah. Like I said, I just remember driving and they're like, the Ivy League canceled it. And I can't remember if they canceled it, like they announced they weren't going to have people and then they canceled it right after. I don't remember exactly how it was, but I was just listening to sports radio on the way up and I'm like, oh, okay. And then, you know, like the next day, the Big Ten's like, well, we're going to go ahead and play, but we're going to have limited attendance. And it's like, okay, that makes sense. But to the point you made earlier, Tyler, like there's no way the NCAA is going to cancel this tournament. This is their moneymaker. This is the revenue thing. So I thought the NCAA was going to treat the basketball tournament like the SEC treated football this year. And like, we're just going to go and throw all caution to the wind and to hell with it. So
did you actually start to drive to Champaign ever? I mean, to Indianapolis, Bob, or did you not? I can't even remember.
No, I was going Thursday morning. I planned to leave at 8 a.m. And that's that night before I was on Twitter, like, should I still go? Like,
yeah, I remember.
I actually went back and looked at those tweets recently. Just, I forget what I was researching. I was like searching for some word to try and find a tweet that I had put up. And one of that word was in one of those tweets from that night. So I read through like the whole thread and everything else. And it was such an interesting debate because, you know, I had people like, no, don't go. This is, you know, flatten the curve was the word that had just come out. And we're trying to have people are debating what that even means and everything else. Right. And I was asking out loud, like, but if there are only 30 people in the building, if there's just the teams and then like 20 media members, like if there's 50 people in the whole building, isn't that okay? Like, isn't that kind of safe? And so it's interesting to me now, especially since we went there for the Baylor game to the Bankers Life, to be like, well, yeah, I mean, you can kind of do this during a pandemic with, you know, obviously testing had to be in place. Obviously, nobody was going to be wearing a mask that weekend. You know, obviously, we've changed a whole lot on it. But it's kind of interesting how the concept being discussed at the time did later become the standard, which was media will be allowed. They'll be socially distanced. Nobody else is allowed in the field. The media will be nowhere near the court. And that's how games will be played and covered in, you know, during this season. So, yeah, so I answer your question. I debated it that night. I decided to wait the next day and just see what happened because I didn't want to check into my Indy hotel if, you know, whatever. And then about, 10 a.m. that Thursday morning is when they pulled the plug. And then by that night, NCAA tournament was canceled and everything fell apart. And so, you know, Brumby and I are like, hey, so that launch on money, I don't think we should do that just yet. And so we put everything on the shelf, you know, and, but that Saturday is when my wife and I drove to Champaign to finalize like where we were going to live, you know, and we're like, well, should we even drive or should like, you know, I remember having a conversation with my wife of like, you know, after, so I went on that Wednesday to do that cable access show. While I was there is when the final offer came in on our condo that we were selling. I signed the paperwork at that cable access show. So we're now under contract to sell our place, move to Champaign. Here we go. And then I remembered like, as we were approaching closing, I was Googling things like, can you move during COVID? Like, I didn't even know if, like, I remember asking a friend, like, would they, like, I mean, are they going to close borders? Like, can I drive across the Poplar Street Bridge from Missouri to Illinois? Like, you know, it was so weird that first week of like, wait a second, like, what exactly does lockdown mean? And what, you know, we're seeing all these shots from New York City and we're seeing all these shots from New Jersey and Italy and everything else. Yeah. It's like, wait a second. Are we like, if we go into super duper lockdown, can I even like call a moving company, have them load my stuff and take it to Champaign? Like, how is this going to even work? So it was just such a bizarre time of like, you know, we're my wife and I are packing up our life and moving to Champaign. And we don't even know when sports are ever going to return. And we don't even know if, you know, like, hey, are we allowed to do this? Are we doing something illegal here? You know, it's just so weird. It was just so bizarre at the time. Go ahead.
So just to build on that real quick, but to turn it back to sports and not, you know, your breaking the law and bringing all your Missouri germs into Champaign.
Right.
The COVID lockdown and canceling the NCAA tournament was the first time I went through. I was looking at this recently. I sent a text message to my buddy Jim that said, I'm not sure the Lovey experiment's going to work, because pretty much his prep recruiting strategy was to wait late in the year.
Yes.
Kind of go close it out. And everybody was cleaning his clock in March.
Yep.
And then no more campus visits, and there may not be football. Or the, all the summer evaluation camp season stuff that he'd always, that was always kind of where they always did that. And I was like,
absolutely.
Yep. We're not going to get a single recruit for the entire 2021 season.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was the moment where the Lovie Smith tenure got very tenuous in my mind.
And that's such a great way to preface it, because that's what happened. I mean, that's what we saw is other schools were making hay, and, yeah, I always made that same point that, like, you would hear kids come home from an Illinois spring visit saying, yeah, they want me to come back at some point. And, you know, and they'd come home from somewhere else and say, like, they really want me to commit tomorrow. And, and it's like, well, there's no effort. There's no, you know, urgency. They're just, hey, you know, on your seventh time on campus, that's when you're going to really fall in love.
Yeah, PJ Fleck put me on a timer and flipped over on my way out the door.
Exactly.
You know, the irony is that the last two home games in basketball, Indiana and Iowa, Illinois was able to get a bunch of their high level recruits on campus. They have Brandon Weston and David Jones and Tyrone Nesbitt and Mac Etienne, and it still didn't matter. They went elsewhere anyway. So.
Goody was at the Indiana game, right? No, Iowa game.
Yeah, but he was the one. Goody's the one that of the five of the big guys.
One for five. Campus.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. So I guess we could kind of fast forward through, you know, like there's the false start for Big Ten football. Well,
I will say that you missed one big thing. There was the day, the 48 hours in July, I think it was the last day of July, when we found out that the basketball season was going to, a basketball season, we don't want to leave out the fact that the 2 days back to back where Io and Kofi both said they were coming back. That was a pretty big news drop in the middle of the summer. That was, I guess, in a weird way, one benefit of COVID, because I don't know that happens if we didn't have a COVID situation. So before you get into football, there's that one huge that season changing moment in the summer that was momentous.
But I think we all had the same thought when it happened of like, oh God, they're coming back. We could be top five. Oh my God, I can see it now. They're going to cancel the season. Like, we're going to have a top five team and they're going to decide in September, you know what? We're just not going to play college basketball this year. Yeah. So again, I have to take the thread of Illinois fandom in the 2010s and weave it through everything of that what we're talking about. Is there's always this thought of like, oh my gosh, they're both coming back. How good are we going to be? Do we have two of the top 15 players in the country? Wait. I know an Illinois thing is about to happen.
We're not going to have a season, are we?
Yeah, I know what this means. Yes. So we fast forwarded through, but we paused and we rewound and we went over this little blip of, hey, July 31st, we had a pretty good day.
This will be great if.
Yes. And then like a week later is when Big Ten gets canceled, and then it's not going to be canceled, and then it is going to be canceled, and then other conferences are playing and all this craziness. But then
they released the schedule, the first schedule.
Yes.
And then they turned around and canceled it.
So walk me through that. What do you think the thought process was? Was it just like, we, the Big Ten, we know better, so here's what we're going to do, and we're going to set the lead. We're going to create the standard, and other leagues will follow. And then like, wait a minute, they didn't follow us. Or was it just, how do you guys think that all went down?
I believe that the Big 12 was the pivot point, that Big Ten canceled, Pac-12 canceled, Big 12 voted and went like 6-4 were playing, and they just wanted a majority. And so they said, we're doing it, or something like, I don't know the exact numbers, but it was something like that. And then SEC and ACC were like, oh yeah, we're playing too. And that was the, you know, that tipped the scales basically. you know, Supreme Court justices. There's five of them, and first two vote no, and the third one is the swing vote, and they just happen to vote yes, and it pushed it to 3-2.
Yeah, I think if the Big, I agree with you. I think if the Big 12 had voted no, the ACC would have voted no.
Yes,
and then the SEC has no coverage. Yeah, I mean, you know, that point, you play a season by yourself, but the other four major conferences are playing in the spring. Mm-hmm. Then the national title game is going to be tied in with those guys, right? Yep. I think the Big Ten and everybody coming back, though. I'm not sure what the media contracts look like there. But would love to see what that looks like, but I think it gets to the point where you probably can't go and ask ESPN and Fox and everybody for your big payments if you're sitting there with the other conferences are all playing and you're going to play in the spring with much lower ratings. Mm-hmm. So I think that it probably got into, you have to put together something that looks like a full season and get enough games in so you can have a conference title game and tie back to all that so you can go make it work. It would be my guess. I think that's probably why it happened. You know, Texas was the one in the Big 12 that was beating the drum hard, because if they have no sports, they lost quite a bit of money in the Longhorn Network in terms of what they got paid, because there was no inventory, because all the other sports, that's where they actually make a lot of money from ESPN, is all the other sports. So their inventory dried up. So yeah, they needed to have that one or two Texas football games that end up on the Longhorn Network, and all the coaches shows and everything that go with it, because that's where the money's coming from. So they were leaning hard on everybody else, but you know, the Big 12, I think the pivot there helps, because all those schools on their third tier rights. So that's why Oklahoma has the one pay-per-view game every year, and Kansas basketball stuff. Right. So I think that they're all sitting there looking at it going, if we cancel, we all lose a significant portion of what our money is, and that's not good. So yeah, I think all the Texas schools and the two Oklahoma schools voted for it, right?
Yes. Yes. And that's when it becomes like really bizarre, in that like it kind of pivoted on that moment. And after that, like, you know, immediately there's backpedaling in the Big Ten, and then there's questions on myocarditis and all this, like,
the Kevin Warren worst press conference.
Yes. And the, you know, and suddenly it's backpedaling, and it's this and it's that, and nobody knows what's, you know, everybody's taking sides as to, no, they'll all just eventually cancel, versus no, they'll all eventually turn around and play.
Yeah. And then I remember the big fight as well, with the Big 12 kind of hung the SEC out to dry when they said, yes, we will play non-conference games.
Right.
And the ACC allowed for one. And then the SEC then, who had already preliminary done a straw poll and knew that they weren't going to get any support from their people to, from their presidents to run a non-conference slate, then had to come out, and they were hoping that the ACC would say no non-conference stuff. So then the ACC, SEC crossover games, it could be like, well, we tried, no one's doing it. But yeah, they got made to look pretty bad there.
And then there's going to be this whole other part of this. Like, I predict in the next 5 years, even the way the playoff is seeded and ran will source back to this. Like, okay, here, I'm going to go on a little rant here. Do I believe Ohio State deserves to be in the playoff? Yes. Do I believe Ohio State is in the playoff because of recruiting? 100%.
Yes.
Ohio State is in the playoff because people have said for a long time that they have really good players. And people, they didn't prove it. They didn't have
to be fair. Ohio State has one of the four best rosters of football players.
Yes.
Whether or not they're one of the four best teams is a completely different question. They are the John Calipari. I'm going to put together a bunch of young athletes and see what we get.
Yes. If Indiana football this year had played Ohio State's schedule and done the exact same thing and won the Big Ten championship game, in no way is Indiana in the playoff with a 6-0 record, just not just because their name is Indiana, but because people look at it and say, I don't know, that guy, are they really that good? How many NFL players are there? This and that. Ohio State is there simply because of talent, for no other reason. And that talent, you have to source back to recruiting rankings. Like, it's really, yes, there's projections of NFL drafts, and you could say, wow, they probably have 15 NFL players, and you know, they're going to have 12 guys drafted this year, but whatever. Doesn't matter. They are there simply because it's like, okay, let's take the four best rosters and let them have a playoff. And that thought is going to carry forward for a long time as these committees see the playoff teams, is like, what are we really doing here? Are we just trying to find the four best teams? Like the four teams ranked number one in Class A basketball in Illinois? Like the coaches just think these are the four best teams, so those are the guys who should get it? Or is it going to be like really what happened? And again, it might be. Ohio State probably is one of the four best teams. But let's be really honest here. Let's be really serious. Why we are doing this? Oh, 6-0 Ohio State is in the playoff because of talent.
And they are going to bring a hell of a lot of eyeballs to
that's a good point. The yes. game. Talent and 13 million Ohioans of right. the 12 million in the state tuning in to watch a certain game.
Plus a very large percentage of South Carolina, apparently, based on my experience of being there.
Yes. Okay, that's a whole other – that's topic. That's another topic. It's another podcast for another day. We're now in the fall. Let's say we're in September. September 16th or whatever, they announce Big Ten football is coming back. We're going to play. With the announcement that football is coming back, it's almost like this. We're pretty assured that basketball will play as well. And if you remember, like we had kind of survived some of the surges and the summer was okay. And there was this thought of like, okay, I think this is all really happening. I think the Big Ten is absolutely going to play starting October 23rd. And I think Big Ten basketball will follow. So we launched the subscription structure on the site based on that. You know, look, it is time. It's going to happen. This is going to be a thing. We're going to have games to watch. We're going to have stuff to evaluate. And Craig, we'll go to you first. Like your thought as we approached October 23rd of, you know, what you were expecting from Illinois football in this weird, crazy season.
Well, first and foremost, you'd already seen the Big 12 play football, right? You had that crazy, was it Central Arkansas, Austin Peay game that was like right before Labor Day. So you saw limited attendance, things like that. Okay, so no fans in the stands, quiet stadiums, okay. But kind of saw that. I was of two minds, and I wasn't sure which way this was going to go. This could go one of two ways for Illinois football. One is that you have a very experienced roster. Everybody is playing with no spring practice, very little practice reps. Illinois is running a fairly simple scheme. It's easy to teach. You've got guys who have played it in a long time. You could be very disciplined. Everything could really turn out for you. Or the other part is that Illinois is running a very simple scheme. You don't actually, you know, you have four new defensive linemen you need to go get in there. You really needed to get some secondary reps for guys like Beeson and other guys. One of the things Lovey did do while he recruited at Illinois was he recruited guys who were athletes and not football players. You know, we all have our thoughts about Mason Monheim in his days there, but one of the things Beckman loved about Monheim was he was a football player ready to play day one. Whether or not he had the high-end talent level to go get there, you know, he was not going to be mistaken for a track star, but he was a football player. Mm-hmm. Lovey was recruiting a bunch of athletes that we were going to try to turn into football players. Mm-hmm. And without that extra practice, were the athletes, did they get the athletes to be football players? So that was the question.
I think that absolutely nails it of like, you know, why was Illinois so unprepared those first three games? Why was it so far behind? Like, were we even ready? Like, what is happening right now? Like, we were decent. I think it all boils down to exactly that.
Yeah, well, that Wisconsin game, just, it, you know, we showed everything at that point. Like, okay, this is not a team that's going to be ready to compete and prepared. And it was even more frustrating to then watch, like, Northwestern take off and
– yep.
Slightly more talented team, but like, yeah, 3-9 last year. You knew they were going to be better. Last year was 2 years ago was an aberration to the positive. Last year was an aberration to the negative. They were going to come back. Knew they were going to come back, but mm-hmm. you know, were they going to be 500 or what's that record going to look like? And then they just come out and, you know, really until they had like 47 turnovers against Michigan State. Northwestern was really a solid team, you know, everybody just doing the little things. There was nothing spectacular about that team. They won a ton of one score games. And, you know, you watch what they did. You saw Illinois get their just the doors blown off against Wisconsin right out of the gate. It's like we should have looked like Northwestern in terms of preparedness, and we did not.
Not in any way. And then you start 0-3, and gosh, I mean, we've done so much hashing. I don't know.
And you can talk about it. You had, you know, the COVID protocol. You lost a bunch of players, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if COVID really exemplified the Lovie Smith recruiting thing, where we didn't have quality depth at a lot of positions. You know, the end of the Ron Zook era, you knew 2012 was going to be a rough year for Illinois football, because there was a talent drop off. But 2013 was always going to be a terrible year because they had no defensive linemen. They just didn't recruit them. We just didn't have it right. Yep. At the end of the Beckman era into Cubitt, you know, 2016 probably going to be okay. 2017 was always going to be awful. We had no offensive linemen. It was just evident if you watch rosters, you know, 2020 for Illinois going to be okay. 2021, you have a real problem because you have no secondary, mm-hmm. right? And 2020, we lost a lot of our D-line. But Carney, yeah, you had some players there, but the lack of secondary, just when you saw that, you know, right out of the gate, things go badly, you're like, there's no coming back from this, right? You just knew. And I think those first three games, you had the COVID protocol, and I think you kind of made some excuses for it. They win two in a row. Like, yeah, okay, maybe it's not as bad as we thought. COVID hurt them, et cetera, et cetera. But then, you know, you go to Iowa and you're not competitive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Northwestern, you're not competitive. And you didn't have your full roster, but you had enough of it. And, yep. you know, the drop off from the starters to the second string just tells you that you're never going to be there. And they got really lucky. I mean, aside from, you know, last year they made the bowl game with basically no injuries, no major injuries, right? And then this year you have COVID that kind of creates injuries, for lack of a better term. I'll throw that in quotation marks. And you just saw that it just wasn't there. You know, other teams had COVID issues too and didn't have that much of a drop off.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Just to mention that, you know, like you mentioned COVID as an excuse, or not an excuse. And PJ Fleck, what they lost a third of their roster, right? And they still came back and they were competitive and won some games down the stretch. So, yeah, I mean, it was pretty apparent, as Craig was saying.
Yeah, and to top it all off, like, this was supposed to be the season Indiana had. Like, this was supposed to be 2001, 2007. Like, a surge. Like, just based on the math of the roster, if you go back to the Zook, you know, lose big, lose small, you know, if last year was win small, this was supposed to be win big. You have everybody wreck. You have all this returning production, you have your quarterback, you have a full offensive line, you have all this back, and to come out in the first three games and just look not even prepared, you just can't. Like, it's.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure you needed to have the Indiana season, but you should have looked something like what Iowa was, right?
Yep.
You know, where you're competitive in every game, and, you know, you really think.
Two tough games, but we're very close to
one possession games. You were in every game. I mean, I think that's the hardest part about with Illinois, is that you just, you know, right out of the gate against Wisconsin, you weren't after the first quarter. I didn't see the game, so I only watched the tape briefly, but you weren't in that game. I mean, you just weren't in that game. And so, like, right out of the gate, you're not in a game. That shouldn't be happening. And then, you know, we all thought, well, maybe Graham Mertz is, you know, guy who is Ron Powell's going to win four Heismans and all this stuff. And then
they can look silly and.
Yeah. And then suddenly they're 3-3 at the end of the year and, you know, just not good. So, yeah, it was very, very evident. And I think, Tyler, you made a great point, right? Other teams had some COVID problems. Minnesota in particular was a great example with Fleck, where, you know, they, you know, I think they lost to Wisconsin in out the year, but, you know, he got them back to .500. Mm-hmm. And they were in, you know, after a blowout here or there, but they were in most of their games. So, you know, just the talent disparity between the Illinois and the rest of the Big Ten West really shined this year, and that's not a good place to be.
Well, we'll always have Illinois had a chance to win the Big Ten West with two games remaining. I can always cling to my scenarios, where I should add six of the seven teams in the Big Ten West at that time had a scenario where they could win the Big Ten West. But we'll always have the moment of dreaming right until it doesn't even come close to happening. Let's put a bow on it. Let's wrap Illinois football into a box and shove it in that box and get to November, December with Illinois basketball. So, because this is the hopeful pin everything on it moment. And it hasn't been great. And it hasn't been what we originally thought it might be when we were number eight preseason. But we have had these moments of real, true hope for the Illinois fan base with what this team has shown at times. So let's just do a quick chronological order. We do the revamped Illini Classic. We play two terrible teams, but we win by 50 plus, and we. You know, I remember seeing the stat on SportsCenter that they put up, like, teams that won their first two games by 50-plus and how they ended up. And, like, two won a national title, and one was a Oklahoma team was in the Final Four or whatever. And so it's like, okay, well, here, this is it. Then you flip to Ohio, and we if DeMonte doesn't hit that three, Ohio is shooting free throws to, you know, they'd be just hit your free throws away from winning. And that flips us back around. And then we lose to Baylor, but we beat Duke in this. So, Tyler, take us through the roller coaster of the first, eight games of Illinois basketball.
Yeah, roller coaster is the best way to put it. I mean, I covered two of the three Illinois Classic games, and I was there for Chicago State, who has since shut down their program due to COVID. But so that they were a mess. And then the Ohio game, you think, well, maybe it's just one of those things where they're transcendent, you know, mid-major guy that always torches Illinois. He had a otherworldly performance, and every great team struggles at one point or another early in the season. So you can explain that away. And then Baylor, you know, maybe they are, you know, far. They were just a better team, and maybe Baylor and Gonzaga are, you know, they're number one and two, and then there's the rest of the field kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So you're still feeling pretty good about yourself. And I even, you know, wrote in the preview that. And going over the schedule that, you know, this year you beat Missouri. You have to. This is, you know, from my standpoint, and you know, that maybe that's proven to be incorrect. I thought Missouri was going to be an average type team. And so I went into that game fully expecting a win, a dominant win. And obviously that didn't happen. And so now you're starting to have a little second thoughts about, well, like you had said early in the Penn State game, maybe this wasn't the team we thought it was. But then you get these glimpses, and you come home and you beat Duke by 20 points on their court, and then you throttle Minnesota by 30, and so you're right. It's been this roller coaster, but now you look back at it in retrospect and you think, well, okay, take Ohio for what it was, but maybe Missouri is pretty good. They've beaten some good teams, and they're ranked higher than us right now. Obviously. Rutgers, you know, in my head, when I went through the schedule, I had pegged this at 15-5 in the Big Ten. One of the losses I had circled was at Rutgers. I just thought that was, I've been high on Rutgers from the beginning. So except for Mizzou, the season's kind of gone as I probably would have expected, you know, split Baylor, Duke, lose at Rutgers, but, you know, win at Mizzou. So you're a game within a game of what I expected. And the one thing that moving forward that is just amazing to me. This conference is just bonkers right now. I mean, nine teams in the Big Ten. Northwestern is ranked. Mm-hmm. There's just I predicted 15-5 in the conference, and now I'm thinking that, you know, we could be 13-7, 12-8, and that's probably going to be fine. You know, are we
a four seed?
It's just bonkers right now. So maybe you have to recalibrate things just by how good the conference is. There's not going to be, you try to do transit of property in the Big Ten, you'll lose your mind because it's just, you just can't do it. So the November and December, we started out eight, we're at 15 now. Are we going to win the Big Ten? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Are we the most consistent team I've seen in the conference so far? I think we are. I think that we have the only real bad loss. I'm not sure I'm sold on Northwestern yet. So I guess to wrap it all up, it's been a roller coaster, but I still remain extremely optimistic about this team. We're moving into the new year, and I think, you know, we had this early conference schedule. It's favorable, and that bodes well because you're going to, you know, get some win equity, as I like. You're going to lose some games. It's going to happen, but are you still going to has this team done what they needed to do in November, December to position themselves for a high quality seed, protected seed to make a run in the tournament? Absolutely. So aside from the Missouri win, I'm not displeased with the November and December that this team has shown.
Yeah. I have this team, like, it's such a weird fan experience. You mentioned my tweet from the Penn State game where I just tweeted that I was hovering over the maybe we're not that good button, but I never pressed it, I would like to know. But it's such, like, against North Carolina A&T and Chicago State, we're like, this is easily the best Illinois team since 05. We've played a lot of crappy teams. We've never looked this freaking incredibly dominant when we play those teams. Then we play Ohio, and it's like, oh, gosh. Like, need 2 threes in the final minute to beat a MAC team that's now lost, I think, their first 2 MAC games, I believe.
Yeah.
So
Akron, like, beat them.
Right. Gross, yes, beat them. Lost to John Gross by 20. So, like, it's like, oh, maybe we're not. And then you're kind of there with Baylor, but they're clearly a level above you. And it's like, oh, ish. Then you beat Duke by 15 on the road at Cameron Indoor. And it's like, oh, God, no, we are. You lose to Missouri. It's like, oh, God, no, we're not. You blow out Minnesota. Oh, God, we are great. You lose it. You know, it's like, we're not just like, we're either 3 or we're a 9.6. Like, we haven't had any 7 performances. Maybe Indiana was, but it's just so weird to be like, yes, we are absolutely all of that and more. We're Final Four. Oh, wait, is it just not happening? It's just so weird for me.
I think we just still have to – that's. I feel like I can only view it through the lens of how good this conference is. And it's an Illinois fan thing to do. We diminish our wins and we – magnify our losses, like, oh, we killed Minnesota, but they're terrible. We should have killed Minnesota. We beat Penn State on the road by 17. Yeah, but you were down 15 to start. It wasn't a very good performance, and Penn State's no good anyway. But now, after the fact, same as Missouri. Oh, how do you lose to that terrible Missouri team? Oh wait, Missouri's now ranked in the top 10. Mm-hmm. But and then, of course, when you lose a game like Rutgers, oh, see, they're not the team we thought we were in the first mm-hmm. place. Oh, you know, so. That's that kind of Illinois fandom. We place undue pressure, yes, on the season based on these wins and losses, and trying to do this transitive property thing. But when every team in the conference is good, pretty much as we've seen, except maybe Nebraska, it's mm-hmm. it's just, you're going to be happy with any win in the Big Ten. I still think this is a 13-15 conference win team. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that's going to be enough to put you in a good position, like Craig was saying, a 3-4 seed. And that's compared to where we've been ever since we started writing, to kind of bring it back full circle in 2014, I'm mm-hmm. okay with that.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, so we've come to the end of 2020. You know, I as we've talked about this, I'm kind of reminded what, like, May was like, and what it was like to be like, when am I next going to see a game? Like, when can I even watch the team? Like, I'll take anything right now. So, you know, the fact that we're having this conversation is still good. The fact that we had a football season, bad as it was, the fact that we have this basketball season, like, I am grateful for where we've gotten, and I'm excited to see, you know, I think 2020 ends pretty hopeful. Like, any new coach, don't care who it is, you're going to be hopeful. Like, he's going to turn recruiting around. He's going to turn the offense around. He's going to turn the defense around. You know, there's always this hope, and any, you know, we're number 15 basketball team that's probably going to climb to the top 10 at some point again. And, you know, that's pretty exciting next 3 months. So we'll leave with this, and this was your homework before tonight. So Craig, we'll go to you first. Oh, man. In the last 365 days, name the specific high point for Illinois football.
I'm going to go and blow up your question and say the high point for Illinois before I say Illinois football was the developing their own COVID test.
Oh, good answer.
So the one thing I will say overall is just Illinois. The one thing about Illinois where I'm standing right now, you're talking about being hopeful, mm-hmm. is that not living in Illinois now, I consider and say I have some pride in my university right now. Yep. You know, you don't just get the haha Illinois football sucks,
yep.
or any of that stuff that you have, right? You've got, you know, got a new coach. There's a reason to have some optimism. Hey, we're going to go make some changes. Maybe the luster comes off that a little bit as the hires come in and they're not what we expect. Mm-hmm. Which we kind of had with Garrick McGee with Lovey, but nonetheless, mm-hmm. but you know, we developed the COVID test and the university is running and seems to be doing great things. The basketball team's, you know, coming together, but yeah, that COVID test, I think, is just for the overall university as a high point. Prove that things could happen. That's there. High point for Illinois football during the year. I think, you know, the Rod Smith offense was all predicated on, you know, some tempo and running quite a bit. So I think the Isaiah Williams Rutgers game was probably the high point of the Illinois football year. And it peaked very fast. And, you know, next thing you know, you're asking whether or not we're going to have a, quarterback controversy on our hands, and there was no controversy because Peters comes out and he's basically there until the last game. So mm-hmm. high points, Isaiah Williams, Rutgers.
I like it. I like it. Okay, Tyler. High point for Illinois basketball in the entire year of 2020.
I think I have to view this from my fan lens. And I want to say normally the Iowa game, because it was such an important game, and it was such the assembly hall was so electric that day, and it came mm-hmm. down to, you know, to a last second block that Kofi put in, but I was covering that game. So I was kind of muted from yeah. a fan perspective, but so I think the high point, like, and so I have to think, okay, what was my biggest couch noise, fist pump at home yeah. moment? And it's got to be Io's shot at Penn State after the injury. You don't know if he's going to come back at all.
Great answer.
He misses the game. All of a sudden, he's unexpectedly in the starting lineup. He has this amazing game punctuated by this perfect Io dagger mm-hmm. where they had the split screen going on because they were doing the coach reaction game. And mm-hmm. you see Io nail that shot, which pretty much puts the game away. And you just see Pat Chambers on the Penn State sideline just deflate. And mm-hmm. I'm pumping my fist, jumping up and down, trying to not to wake my wife up, kind of a moment. And so I think to boil it down to a moment, that was the highlight of the of the year for me from an Illinois basketball perspective.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Like, it's funny you mentioned that. Like, today I reached for something. My elbow, I think I have tennis elbow in the spot where I fist pumped for that fast break at Duke, like the three quick passes and then the DeMonte layup, which was kind of the dagger of the game. Like, no chance they're coming back now. Like, I fist that, pumped like 50 so times hard. Yes. I fist pumped so hard. Like, my elbow, like, I reached for something. I'm not kidding. At the grocery store today, and it was like a little twinge of pain. And I'm like, I think I have lasting effects from one fist pump that I'm going to be sore for a long time. So, give me much, much more of that in 2021. Okay, gentlemen, we've gone way too long. We all need to go to bed. But thank you for joining me. Thank you for writing for the site. Thank you for joining me in this whole venture. And let's maybe have a better 2021 than we had in 2020.
Let's do it. And thank you as well.
All right. Happy New Year. All right.
Happy New Year, guys.